Good afternoon to everyone. Hope that everyone had an enjoyable week. I'm not sure how this happened, but somewhere along the way I started getting emails from AARP. Good, you find it as funny as I do. Don't get me wrong, I wouldn't mind being retired, but I'm not there yet. But they sent an article this week that really caught my attention. It was titled, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. This was an article written by someone, I believe a nurse, who has a job close, something similar to what we would call a hospice caretaker, who lives with someone during the last 5 to 12 weeks of their lives and nurses them and helps them as they are facing an imminent end. And getting this job, doing this job, she's got to know a lot of her patients and would talk to them. And she noticed over time that there was common things that these people always wanted to talk about. Many of them were regrets. And there were 5 that were common amongst almost all of them. One that was common among all the males. But these people had many regrets that they looked back on their lives. So today I'd like to look at these top 5 regrets. Maybe it's something we can look at in our lives and see if it's something that we have in there right now that we can get rid of while we have our health, while we're young. Maybe there's things we can do to overcome some of these regrets. You're young enough to overcome some of your regrets if you have them. Got the peanut gallery up here. Let's turn to John 10:10 to start. John 10, verse 10, Christ says, The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. What is it to have life abundantly? An abundance is large amounts, to really have a lot of something. Christ wants us to have a lot of life, to really enjoy it now. We don't have to wait on something big to come in the future for us to enjoy life. God gave us this life to enjoy. You know, 1,000,000 years from now, I'd like to be able to look back and say, you know, remember when we were flesh and blood and we took the kids here and we did this? That was awesome. Not look back and think, man, living as flesh and blood was such a curse. I don't know why we had to go through that. This is a life that God's given us right now, and He wants us to enjoy it. So let's look at these top 5 regrets. Let's look for them in our lives and see if there's something we can do to overcome them if we have these. The 5th regret that most people had was, I wish that I had let myself be happier. Many did not realize until the end that happiness is a choice. Happiness is a frame of mind. It's a decision. It's a decision that can be made no matter what the circumstance. What makes you happy? You know, joy is the 2nd fruit of the Spirit that's listed. We should be developing it. Do you need to have a certain level of money or success in your life to be happy? Maybe you're looking for happiness in the wrong places. If we turn to Luke 12, verse 15... This is one of my favorite scriptures because at times it can really ground us. Luke 12 and verse 15. It's easy to get caught up in the things of this world. And he said to them, and he being Christ speaking here says, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. How easy is it to get caught up and wanting possessions and things and working towards things all the time? We need to realize that things don't bring happiness. Things can contribute to our happiness, but things don't bring happiness. At least not a lasting happiness that so many people are looking for. So where does happiness come from? As I said, it's a frame of mind. We've got to look for it. We've got to look for happy things not be negative all the time. Happiness comes from having God in our lives. We are made to want God in our lives. We need to have God in our lives. Proverbs 29, verse 18 says, "Where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint, but happy is he who keeps the law." You know, it's kind of ridiculous to think that God went through all this creation and made everything that he made and made you and me and has this incredible future for us, but didn't give us laws to make us happy. We know he has. He's given us a way to live that produces happiness. So having God and keeping his laws in our lives produces happiness. Our ultimate goal is to become a member of God's family. To know and worship God helps to make us happy. Proverbs 28 and 14 says, "Happy is the man who is always reverent." To be reverent, we need to study our Bibles and have an active prayer life. You know, there's a few of these regrets that we're going to go through this afternoon that I could have put together a whole full-length sermon on just one of these points. Happiness is one of them. Happiness is something that everyone wants, and there's a lot to be said about happiness. There's a lot in the Bible about how to be happy. So if you're having trouble with happiness, look it up. Find some ways to become happiness. Happiness comes from being thankful. When we're thankful for what we have instead of focusing on what we don't have, we start to become a lot more happy. Viktor Frankl was a well-known psychiatrist or psychologist, I don't know the difference, back in the 30s. He lived in Austria. He was well-respected. He had plenty of stuff. He was a wealthy man. He had a wife. One day it all came crashing down. Someone broke into his house, stole everything he had, and carted him and his wife off to concentration camps. Once there, they never saw each other again. Viktor Frankl, he went through, you know, some of the worst things you could even imagine, being in a concentration camp. But he felt like going through this helped him to understand happiness. Later, he would write that people who seek happiness are usually the most unhappy people in the world. If you're seeking happiness just for yourself, you're not going to find it. Happiness is in doing things for other people and building relationships. He later wrote a book about finding beauty in a flower or a sunset while in a concentration camp. You know, happiness, he had nothing at that time, but he was able to find happiness. And that's how we need to be. Helen Keller once said, "When the door of happiness closes, another one opens. But often we're looking so hard at the door that just closed, we don't even see the one that just opened." So don't look at possessions and things as something to make you happy. Be thankful for what we do have. And if you have something and it's taken away, be thankful for what you had. Thankfulness leads to happiness. Another thing is happiness thrives on a future. To know that there's a future, to know that there's something better coming, is just food for happiness. And we should all have something deep in our thought process that reminds us that there's better times coming. There's a whole kingdom coming without the pain and the suffering. We should be able to look for that and find happiness, just even in knowing that one day we're going to be a part of that. The number four regret that these people who were dying shortly had: "I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends." Often they would not truly realize the full benefits of old friends until their dying weeks. And it was not always possible to track them down. Many had become so caught up in their own lives that they had let golden friendships slip by over the years. There were many deep regrets about not giving friendships the time and the effort they deserved. Everyone misses their friends when they are dying. It's common for anyone in a busy lifestyle to let friendships slip. It just happens. Life happens. But you know, we've got to realize the importance of having friends in our lives and developing that relationship. She goes on to write, "That's all that remains in the final weeks, love and relationships." You know, people try to put their affairs in order when they know that their end is coming. They start putting their affairs in order. Why do they do that? It's not because it's going to help them any. It's no benefit to a person who's dying to know that their insurance and everything's taken care of. It's for the ones that they're leaving behind. It's about the relationships that we build while we're here. Proverbs 18, verse 24. Let's turn over there. This was another one of those topics that there's so much written on friendship. Some of these things, I wonder if we even realize the importance of having this stuff in our lives. We kind of take it for granted because it's an everyday occurrence. Proverbs 18, verse 24 says, "A man who has friends must himself be friendly." Some versions say we must show ourselves to be friendly. Well, think about this for a minute. If you're never around your friends, if you don't make time for them, if you don't spend that time with them, how do you show yourself friendly? How do you be a friend to someone that you're never around? Proverbs 27, verse 10 says, "Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, nor go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor nearby than a brother far away." Sometimes our friends can become closer than family. Sometimes physically they are closer to us than family. But just in a relationship, we can become much closer with friends than we are with family sometimes. I see you people every week. I hardly ever see my family. I feel much closer to you than I do some of my family just because of the time we spend together. It's very important to spend time with your friends. Do you know who had good friends? This has always struck me as something every time I read this story in the Bible. And we don't always think of this as him having good friends, I don't think. But I can remember being young reading this and reading the situation and thinking, these were good friends. They may have, later on, they didn't give him the best advice and they had some things said against them. But let's turn over to the book of Job. Job had some good friends. Job chapter 2. I'm going to read verses 11 through 13. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, each one came from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They had all made an appointment to come together, come and mourn with him and to comfort him. So they had heard about his troubles and they decided they were going to come and mourn with him. They wanted to be with their friend in his time of need. And when they raised their eyes from afar and they did not recognize him, they lifted their voices and wept. Each one tore his robe and sprinkled dust on his head towards heaven. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights. And no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. That's a friend. They came and sat 7 days and seven nights before anyone even said a word to Job, just because they could see that he was suffering. But I'm sure it was very important to Job that they were there, that he had his friends by him. He didn't need to hear them say anything. What were they going to say? He didn't need them to speak, but they were there. So who is your friend? Think of some of your friends, especially maybe those that you have grown away from or whatever. Let's not wait till the time approaches to start thinking about we wish we would have kept those connections alive. Remember, everyone misses their friends when they're dying. The third regret that these people had I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. She wrote, many people suppressed their feelings in order to keep peace with others. As a result, they settled for a mediocre existence and never became who they were truly capable of becoming. Many developed illnesses related to the bitterness and resentment they carried as a result. People let themselves get sick over not expressing themselves. This is why God gives us an outline to deal with people who offend us, who hurt our feelings, or whose feelings we hurt. It's just not healthy to carry something for years and years and to let it fester and to let it just eat at you. Matthew 18, verses 15 through 17. Matthew 18, verses 15 through 17. This is the outline that God gives us. Because, you know, there's going to come offenses. There always are. So we follow this outline that God gives us, and one of two things will happen. Either the friendship will be mended and sometimes made stronger and better, or, you know, it moves on. But either way, you get this unhealthy relationship out of your life, this thing that's dragging you down and causing you these problems and sometimes even illnesses. We get rid of the suffering and the pain. We don't need to carry this on. Matthew 18, verses 15 through 17. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. And if he hears you, you have gained your brother. Again, that relationship can go on and even be more healthy and stronger after that. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. You know, there comes a time when the best thing to do is just walk away. Let it go. It may not be easy all the time, but it will release from you these feelings that you have and you keep carrying around. Matthew 5, verses 23 to 24 says, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. That was Matthew 5, verses 23 and 24. So if we know we have offended someone, if we know we have done something that has caused hurt feelings against us, we need to do something to make it right, not let someone fester and carry around hard feelings against us. God wants us all to be reconciled to one another, not carry around these grudges that cause hurt feelings and misery. Many people carry it throughout their lives. I can remember as a kid, my mom's side of the family was awful towards each other. I could never keep it straight. One of my aunts would hate my other aunt, and then my aunt would hate my grandma, and then my grandma, and it was just, we'd go over to my grandma's and I'd be like, Mom, what's Aunt so-and-so doing here? I thought she hated grandma. And Mom's like, that was last week. So... But, you know, I asked my mom one time, I'm like, how did you keep it straight? How did you know who was who and what and who was mad? And she said it didn't matter. I didn't care. Her relationship with her sisters and her mother was not in any way related to how they felt about each other. But they would get their feelings hurt, and it would just fester and grow, and it was just a weird situation most of the time. So let's not carry around these hurt feelings and things like that in our lives. Number two, the second biggest regret that all the people had, and this one was universal among all the men. I'm sure many of you can guess what it is. Not so much with the women, but every man said this. I wish I didn't work so hard. Now, realize that at the time that this lady wrote this article, many of the people that she was nursing in this hospice care, this was from a different time. The women who were at this age now and dying of these illnesses and stuff weren't living in a time where, as younger, they had to work so hard to support their family or be the breadwinner. It was more of a time when the man was responsible for that. But she writes, "This came from every male patient that I nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. All the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence." This is a hard one. This is something that comes down to balance. We've got to get a balance in our lives. The reason I say it's hard is because, you know, it's easy to convince yourself, I'm doing this for my family. Sure, I'm missing this or that, but it's for them. And we can convince ourselves that we're overworking sometimes to do this for our family. But, you know, there's a saying, nobody ever looks back from their deathbed and wishes they'd have spent one more day in the office. It's just not there. We always look back, the tendency is, and to regret spending so much time at work. So God, He gave us work. He wants us to work, obviously. 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 10. We read, "For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat." So work seems pretty important if you like to eat. Obviously, we need to work. We have to support our family. Unfortunately, though, we've become a society of overworkers. Our lives are all out of balance. We don't make time for special events. We need to spend time with our mates. We need to spend time watching our children grow. We need to go to their activities. We need to spend that time with them. It's very important. We're building relationships now that, you know, will come back to either haunt us or be good for us in later years. It's important that we spend the time with our family. I've had a lot of conversations with people where I work. In my trade, it's always like really gangbusters and just busy as can be, or it's really slow. There doesn't seem to be any in between, but there's always these times of really up or down. And it seems like back in the mid-80s to early 90s, it was just constant work all the time. We were so busy. And so many people in the trade will talk about that time back then because it was really a big boom for the industry at the time. And it's so bizarre to me. I've noticed this over the years when people talk about it. They'll say things like, oh, I was working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there were times when I was working 15, 18 hours a day, and I was going through a divorce at the time. And it's always there. And I just, you know, I can make the correlation. I see it. I can understand there was a lot of work at that time. There was, and it's still up and down like that, but it's so sad that people don't make these connections sometime that, you know, spending all this time at work takes them away from their family. I worked with a guy just recently who was always at the shop, whether he needed to be or not, always, constantly at the shop. It was like it was his life. And just before I left the company where he was working, he was starting the process of going through a divorce. And it was just sad to see because I felt like it was just bad choices on his part for spending so much time at work. Proverbs 23 and verse 4 gives us a warning. Do not overwork to be rich. Proverbs 23 and verse 4. There is a purpose for working. We have to provide, but we don't need to overdo it just to be rich, just to have things. Hebrews 13 verse 5. Hebrews 13 verse 5 says, keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. I know it's hard sometimes. There's so many things out there I want. There are. But, you know, we got to keep a balance. We don't have to have everything. Again, we go back to the happiness thing. Things aren't going to make us happy. The number one regret of the dying. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself and not the life others expected of me. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. This was the most common regret of all when people realize that their life is almost over and they look back on it clearly and easily see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Many people have not honored even half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to choices they had made or not made. She goes on to write, it's very important to try and honor at least some of your dreams along the way. From the moment you lose your health, it's too late. Health brings a freedom very few people realize. So, what are some of your dreams and hopes? It's good to have dreams and hopes in this life, but it's more important to pursue them, to actively pursue them. Sometimes we have dreams, and we act like it's the most impossible thing in the world. How many of you have ever heard somebody say, man, I'd love to visit the Grand Canyon? That'll never happen. They're not filling it in. It's still there. If that's a hope or a dream you've got, make it happen. Work towards it. Fulfilling dreams and hopes is a big part of having an abundant life. Not fulfilling our hopes and dreams can make our heart sick. It's not a good thing. Proverbs 13 and verse 12. Not surprisingly, going through this, putting this message together, every one of these points, there are so many verses in the book of Proverbs that fit every one of these points. So if you can look back in your life right now and you see some of these things developing and you want to get them out of your life, go to the book of Proverbs, look it up, find some verses in there that will help you. Proverbs 13 verse 12. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it is a tree of life. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. When we don't do the things that we want to do or pursue the things that we want to pursue, we can make ourselves physically sick and get that sinking feeling inside. I wish I would have done that, but I didn't, and it's too late now. So set high goals. Pursue them relentlessly. Dream big dreams. But never lose sight that our ultimate hopes and dreams rest with God the Father and Jesus Christ. Success in our too much is never enough world is hollow without God. Strive to develop and maintain a close relationship with your Heavenly Father. In the book of Lamentations, chapter 3, verse 24 to 26, Lamentations is after Jeremiah. Lamentations 3, verses 24 to 26. Says, the Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should hope and wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. Our hope needs to be in God. So it's good to have dreams and hopes that we want to fulfill in this life. But let's not forget that our hope for this life and the life to come is grounded in our relationship with God. And you know, we all have these grand hopes and dreams sometimes. And I'm not saying that they're not reachable, but maybe you can simplify them sometimes, so it's a little bit easier to obtain. If you have a hope of someday opening up a restaurant, a world-famous restaurant, loved by everyone, most expensive food, and most loved by other critics, I'm not saying you can't get there, but maybe throw more dinner parties. You can do that. Think about that one for a minute. If you have a simplified version of your goal, and you decide you're going to throw more dinner parties, you're going to spend less time at work because you're going to be preparing for this. You're going to be making connections with your friends because you're going to want your friends to come. You're going to be fulfilling dreams, doing things that you really want to do. We don't have to do everything on a grand scale. Not saying that a grand scale can't be the ultimate goal, but you don't have to start there. We're so much a people of, I want it all or nothing. And usually that means we end up settling for nothing. Let's don't do that. Simplify your dreams. Work your way up. Fulfill these goals that you have. I think there's a deeper spiritual side to this goal as well, of not living our lives to the full extent of what we want to be living them. Are we all truly living the way we want to live? The book of Romans, I didn't write down what chapter. I think it's 7. We'll find out together. Yep. All right. Romans 7, verses 15 through 24. For what I am doing, I do not understand. For what I will to do, that I do not practice. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do what I will not to do, I agree with the law that it is good. But now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Now, if I do what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me. I find then a law that is evil is present with me, the one who wills to do good. For I delight in the law of God according to the inward man, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity, to the law of sin that is, which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? That is a hard series of scriptures to read out loud. The point is, we don't always live the way we want to live, the way we know that we should live. God's shown us how to live our lives. He's given us his laws, and we don't always do it. So that's something we definitely don't want to look back on as a regret, that we weren't the person that we wanted to be, that we knew we should have been, the person who we really are. We need to be examining ourselves regularly to see if we're living as we should be living. Well, that's the list of the top 5 regrets of the dying. Do you see any of them in you? Are there things there that you can look at now and think you need to work on? Because now's the time, when you have your health, when you're able to make changes and do things that you want to do. Because we don't want to sit there and look back at when we're near the end and have these same five regrets that mankind just seems to keep having over and over and over. Remember, Christ came that we should have life and that we should have it more abundantly. Sometimes this life is hard. Sometimes it's not fun. There's a lot of sadness in this world. And yes, there's a better world coming, and we look forward to that. That's our hope, our dreams, to be a part of that. But this is where we are right now. This is the life that God has given us, and He wants us to enjoy it.